Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text next step to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 Hope line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart, they thought, why stop there? Why not create other exciting and unexpected combinations, like rainbows and ropes, or fruity and gummy, or chewy and more chewy? That's why they created fun treats like Sweet Tarts Twisted Rainbow Ropes, Gummies Fruity Splits, and Chewy Fusions. When you dare to combine, it's sure to blow your mind. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine. Visit SweetTartsCandy.com to shop now.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. play the game, and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome to the very first episode of Growing Up the Same. I'm your host, Trevon Edwards. I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Madison. What's going on?
What up, what up?
And we have a very, very special guest to start this off. You guys know him. I've been listening to him for a long time. We got Dom Kennedy joining us. What's going on, Dom?
What up, man? Happy to be here. How y'all feeling?
Man, blessed, bro. Blessed, bro. Trying to stay safe in this crazy world right now. It's a lot going on.
Absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, man. So I ain't gonna spend too much time on the intro. We're just gonna jump right into it. We have a segment that Jason runs, so he can attest to that.
Yeah, and Dom, I mean, we're not gonna gloss over the fact that obviously my cousin. It's our first episode. It's our first time doing any type of interview together. So you know, let's make it light. Let's make it fun. You know, and I got a segment that I have that I like that people like. It's called the one or the two. You know, and basically it's like a this or that question that I ask people based off of what I think that they, you know, are into or whatever, and you give me what you like.
Right.
So, running right now. This is one or the two. 48 Laws of Power or the Four Agreements?
Four Agreements, for sure.
112 or Jodeci?
Oh, Jodeci. I've been close.
Shout out to 112. What's up?
Mustang or Impala?
Impalas, for sure.
Yeah. Round and third or high stepping in the end zone?
Ooh, I mean, the end zone, you already in the end zone. Round and third, you could still be out or you could be just faking and holding up. So I'm going to say the end zone for sure. You got to get in the end zone. Third ain't home.
Yeah. Pac or Biggie?
Man. Okay, I got to split that one down the middle. I'm a super duper Biggie fan. I feel like Pac is the best, you know what I mean, to ever do what we do. But lyrically, I just love Biggie so much, man. I couldn't go against him, you know what I mean? If I was going to bet on somebody, I had to bet on Biggie. He like Babe Ruth with this shit.
Yeah, it's through the roof, right?
Yeah, for real.
Mobb Deep or Dog Pound?
Man, that's a good one. So I would go with the Dog Pound. You know what I'm saying? Just me personally, I would go with the Dog Pound. But Mobb Deep ain't no joke, for sure. They're kind of similar to me.
Yeah.
But on different coasts, obviously.
Right, right. Tyson or Mayweather?
Tyson, for sure. Mike Tyson, the champ.
Yeah. Do the Right Thing or Malcolm X?
I mean, Spike Lee's movie was it was something that he had to create, you know, obviously from adverse and real life circumstances, but he had to create it. Malcolm X is more, you know, autobiography, but just in terms of the movies, I would still go with Malcolm X. I love Malcolm X more, even though I enjoy Do the Right Thing to the utmost. You know, it's probably in my top 20 movies of all time, for sure. Probably top 10, honestly. They both are.
Right. Griffey or Bonds?
Oh, man. Who is Bonds? Who is that? <King Griffey.
laughs> All right. Tom Landry or Jimmy Johnson?
I don't really know that much about Tom Landry, but I'll say Jimmy Johnson, man. He was a great coach, and he was one of them coaches that fit his mystique and his look fit the era and the team which he served. You know what I mean? The Cowboys, like, it's very few people that's, like, perfect for the job. Like, he like Pat Riley status, you know what I mean? Like, he looked like the coach of that team, you know, in that era. Jimmy Johnson, it's hard to beat that. You know, he had a good run, for sure.
Yeah. Venice or Malibu?
Venice, for sure. V's up. You already know.
Yeah. Money or power?
Man, I would say that's a good one, man. I would say power is important because with power you can get some money, Well, money, you could get a little bit of power, but not really. But power, with power, you could get a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. If I had to choose one, and because money is so abundant, it doesn't seem that way. Maybe when you're trying to get some, but money is more abundant than power is. You know what I mean? Power is not as easily grasped, and it's not as abundant. Like, people have money and have no power. Right. But people with power got money. You know what I'm saying? Pretty much all the time.
Right.
But a lot of power got money. So I could turn the power into some money. So in that case, I would say power for sure.
Magic or Kobe?
Magic. 32.
Lakers or Dodgers?
I can't do it, man. If I had to, though, I would say I would go with the Dodgers, man, just because I love Dodger Stadium, but I love the Lakers too, man. I really do. I'm not a complete. I like baseball more than I like basketball as a whole, the NBA as a whole, but I do love the Lakers a lot. Like, my heart, I have a space in my heart for the Lakers, but the Dodgers, me being a baseball guy and Dodgers and Dodger Stadium and everything is like, it's the perfect scenario.
All right. Dunks or Jordan 1s?
Woo, Jordan 1s. They damn near dunks, but a little bit better, so you can't go wrong. You know, you get that little wing on the top.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or on the lows on the back in that case. But, yeah, Jordan 1s is, like, a little bit better version of some dunks. You know, it's only certain dunks that, like, I would probably wear nowadays, but Jordan 1s, I'll bust those for sure before I bust some dunks.
Right. All right, last one. The Bullets Ain't Got No Name series or the Marathon series?
I got to go with the Bullets Ain't Got No Name, man. That's the foundation right there. And I feel like, you know, Nip would say the same thing. Without that, it ain't no marathon series. You know, even though I was fortunate to be a part of a marathon series and the shows and everything, I watch Bullets Ain't Got No Name more as on from the street level, from the ground level as a fan and just learning about it and the impact. You know, it wasn't mainstream, nowhere close, but you could see what was building if you was paying attention, you know, and you know how the rap game goes. You could see what was building, and man, on the time when the marathon store opened, I bought Bullets Ain't Got No Name. I believe it was volume 1 or volume 2 up there that day, and I still got it. Yeah, so that just tells you right there, you know what I mean? Like, it's always some gems you could draw. I hear some songs on there, and I told them that it's stuff on there I heard when I bought that CD that I had never even. That I really missed when it was new, you know what I mean? And I was like, damn, this song right here sound like it just came out, you know what I mean? Like, it was being like it was a new song, even though it was on Bullets Ain't Got No Names. So just me being from LA, I got a different feeling for that, you know what I'm saying? I got a different respect and feeling for Bullets Ain't Got No Names series. That was like the last of the music that I really anticipated that was like truly underground, you know, in those times. That was like do it yourself, but it still hit though. You know what I'm saying? Like you was waiting for the new one to come out. Like you cared about it, you know?
Yep. For sure. Well, that was my one of the two segment.
Yep. Thank you.
I throw it to Trey right now.
All right, man. So now I'm gonna come up with the tricky questions. Obviously, I did some research, and, you know, obviously, since you guys are cousins / brothers, he let me in on a little in secret. So let's talk about Nike Talk.
Nike Talk. Shout out to Nike Talk. I ain't been on there in years.
So
I'm going to use my screen name. I was just saying that the next platform that blow up, like some Twitter or some Instagram, I'm not even going to go with my name. I'm going to go with my Nike Talk, man. So if y'all was on Nike Talk, y'all know what it was.
I got a couple homies that's in the sneaker industry now, and they remember you actually from, you know, posting in there. And they were like, yeah, everybody basically that's actually doing it was at on Nike Talk.
So that's crazy. Yeah. Wale was on there. Shout out to Wale. It was a lot of people on there. Ben Baller used to be on there clowning. He probably still on there clowning. Yeah, it was a lot of people on there for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely the culture. So I was told that you used to do custom shoes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, when I got out of high school, my boy, he had an idea, and I just really kind of helped him. It wasn't nothing I would have did on my own, or it wasn't nothing in my dreams. It was just something that I was into. I was always into, you know, shoes and like just being fly. So
I just helped, you know, really. I was like the second in command in terms of like designing and coming up with ideas, but really it was my boy who I went to high school with. It was his idea.
Okay. So you talked about being fly. I mean, I'm from Eastside Compton. I used to come all the way to LA to go to Men's Land and up against the wall. And I heard that you used to work it up against the wall.
Yeah. South Bay Galleria.
Classic.
That was the only job I ever had. I was up in there though. Saturdays used to be going crazy.
Y'all hired some good looking chicks too, man. So it was easy to like, you know, everybody wanted to flex and act like they, you know, had something. So they was
the number one store in the mall. I mean, if you're really from LA and, you know, you graduated in those days and you was doing your thing, you know, around that time, you know what I mean? That was the number one store in the mall, man. I seen it with my own eyes. Again, I was a fan going to all the ones. That's what we used to go to Fox Hills every day, if not three, four times a week, you know, and I kind of just got the job just being known and knowing people, except I got the one at South Bay instead of Fox Hills, and it was popping, man. That was like, if you was a young person doing your thing, I still see people and know people to this day in the street that I've worked with or met while I was working at up against the wall, and I was like, I was 18, 19, you know?
Yeah, man, that's culture right there, because a lot of people... You know, obviously, it's a different type of L.A. Well, it's not L.A. because South Central is real L.A. to me. And then, obviously, outer towners call L.A. Hollywood. You know what I mean? So they don't really know. They missed a good time. Did you ever step foot in Patriotic Hall? You know, those little spots?
I probably did. I don't remember. They used to have them crazy parties. I remember it used to be the spots over there by SC they used to have, too. I don't remember the name of it. Manly, but yeah, I know exactly where you're talking about, man. That was a whole era right there for sure.
Yeah.
That was a whole era. That was the Bobby Valentino, Guapale, Lil Khan.
Closer to my dream.
And all of them beats. You know what I mean? It was going crazy.
That's when you had the act, right? When you had
I was beating that act. Yeah, man, we was trying to pull up. My homies sat with little whips, and everybody would meet up. UCLA parties, Westwood little joints, try to get into them reggae fest. It was a beautiful time, man, for real.
Yeah,
that's when a lot of people made their names. You know what I mean? And
real,
it's on the scene for real, for real.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I grew up playing basketball at Dominguez.
Okay,
you played baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where'd you play baseball at?
I played at Culver City, Babe Ruth, and Culver City Little League for the most part. You know, that was where my career took place. I didn't play in high school. I wasn't a great student. I wasn't fortunate enough to play in high school. I was on the team till it was time to, you know what I mean, turn in your grades.
It'd be like that sometimes, man, yeah, but you still figure it out.
I don't remember being ever like you know, I had fun with it. Like, I played in a little traveling teams, you know, after the season because I was one of, like, the All-Stars or whatever. I remember I was in a newspaper before. We played at El Segundo Field, and they was always good. And we played them a couple times and things like that. I played with some cool players and met some cool people. So I played up until I was about, like, 15, I guess you could say. So it was cool. I learned a lot. I still use metaphors and things to this day about, you know, things that I really learned from baseball that I really didn't realize was, like, life lessons. I just thought it was part of the game. Mm-hmm. But it turned out to be things that, like, kind of molded me, you know, my approach to things and the way I do my thing in life and in music, for sure.
Yeah. So Jason mentioned, you know, I guess you're a big Griffey fan. How did you balance that out with your, you know, with your fandom for the Dodgers? Like, would you root for Griffey when they played against the Dodgers?
I saw Griffey hit a home run at Dodger Stadium. Baseball people probably know for sure that they started interleague play back in the 90s. So before that, you couldn't see American League player play a National League team and vice versa. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kid, they brought it back. They brought interleague play back. They still do it. and saw the first series that Griffey played, the Mariners played at Dodger Stadium. I was there, and he hit a home run. And then I seen him play the day before I graduated eighth grade in Anaheim, and he hit a home run. So the two times I saw Griffey with my own eyes play, he hit a home run. So, I mean, that's like, you know, your favorite artist doing your favorite song. You know, when you pay to see him, that's all you want. So he'll always be number one to me, and that's true stories, you know what I'm saying, for real.
So we're 84, 85. And we obviously have some of the same favorite players growing up and watch some of the same stuff. What's your thoughts on Deion Sanders and the Cowboys?
I was a Cowboy fan at that time, man. My mom is a big Cowboy fan. She converted me. She didn't convert me, but she did with her fandom. And after the Raiders left, I didn't really have no team. So I kind of slid with her with the Cowboy jerseys and all of that because they was balling.
And his mom a Cowboy fan, too?
Huh?
I think Trey's mom is a Cowboy fan.
Yeah, my mom a Cowboy fan, too. But my mom thirsty, though. She a Crip.
So he came up to the event. He had an event where they like they do like the podcast, live podcast, him and all the guys, right? It was sold out. His mom came up on stage full Cowboy, everything, like
my mom is super Cowboy fan too. Been to the new stadium, you know what I mean? Went to the old stadium, all of that. So it's like, when Deion got there, hell yeah. I mean, every kid knew who Deion was for his talent, and then he had his own shoe.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So back then, if you had your own shoe, that automatically made you a star and somebody, you know, even no matter if we seen you really play a lot or not. There wasn't a lot of Falcons games on TV, but people knew who Deion Sanders was. So when he got to the Cowboys, hell yeah, I was happy to see him on the Cowboys for sure. Super baller. You know, he didn't stay long, but I get it now, you know, in terms of it being a business, and he was the best at what he did for hire, you know what I mean? So Jerry Jones paid him for that year or whatever, and then he skated, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, he definitely was one of the flyest. So Jason, man, I also have Jason serving as a executive producer, and he comes up with these dope-ass questions. And one of the questions was, what was your favorite bootleg tape to watch?
My favorite bootleg tape to watch? Straight bootleg?
Yeah, straight bootleg. I'm talking about, you know, real L.A., numbers at the bottom. That type of bootleg.
Shit, my dad had that Tupac, How Do You Want It, Triple X version on the tape. I wish I had that, man. Damn, I wish I still had that, for real. I be thinking about that a lot. Like, damn, that shit would be amazing to see that if somebody still had that. He had the uncut version. They had the uncut with the porn stars in there version on the Tupac. And my dad had it on tape. And man, I wish I still had it. That's probably I used to play that. I didn't play it a lot. It wasn't really showing none. It was just fly to see the different, you know, because it wasn't on TV. So it was like, oh, this is the one.
I remember I used to watch, you know, I used to dub the tapes, right? So I remember I used to watch in the back Players Club a lot because it was like
amazing movie.
It had a lot of nudity in it. And like Lisa Ray was, you know what I'm saying, bad as fuck.
Yeah.
Used to watch that shit at Gang of Time. It was funny as fuck. I didn't even know who Charlie Murphy was then, too. Like, looking back at it, like, he was funny as hell in that movie. But, like, looking back, like, damn, that was Charlie Murphy.
Right.
My favorite scene from that is Miami Style when he bombed on him and hit him in the back of the head. I got a question for both of y'all. All right, what do you remember about Dom? Well, pretty much the joint studio session, y'all first one ever.
I don't remember. I mean, it's different levels of it. I mean, our first paid studio session where we had like an engineer, which would be Mr. Payback on Slauson Avenue.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. It just not really knowing a lot. Like, I don't think people understood. Like, I had talent a little bit, but I wasn't really like, we didn't come from the music business. We just had talent and confidence to like be ourselves, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't learn the game, you know? So from those early ones, like working with somebody who had structured songs and did stuff, like it used to be all type of funny stuff going on, man, just like counting bars and telling you how to do, you know, just structure a song or where to stop or what you should do right there. Like, it was so basic.
Like, I tried to count the bars, but Clint, I didn't know how to layer shit at all. So we would go in there and like niggas didn't know you had to double shit. Niggas didn't know where to double shit, how to make, you know what I'm saying, make the hook sound better, make this stand. Like, we didn't know nothing. I just knew how to count bars because I made beats. So I was like, this is 16, like rapping here. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is where we're going to put the hook at. Let's figure out a hook. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then we went up there.
Instructions, really. And, kind of like from what I remember, it was like, okay, this is what we got. And I would say my part, and then he would listen and be like, okay, do that. And then, you know, we'll just go from there, like he said, and piece it together and go to the next part. And he would say, all right, double this or stack this part or do this. You know, that wasn't really, I had never seen nobody record a song before. You feel me? It sounds crazy now, but it's like, I never went to no studios. Like, yeah. I didn't hang around the, you know what I mean, Hollywood or like stars. Nobody was like, oh, y'all tight, come to the spot. Like, I never even seen nobody make a song.
Yeah.
We was just trying it. Like, we was just trying it, man. It wasn't really that much thought into it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember the first session. That's when we did Fresh to Death, because it was me, you, Joey. Yeah. I think G and Chris showed up at the end.
Right.
And it was you and Joey. We did Fresh to Death. We did Late Night Creep. And then I think we did Star. And then and then Chris and G, you know what I'm saying, came and wrote some shit and hopped in there. Like, niggas going to the studio.
We would get as much stuff as we could done, basically. You know, we would have a lot of things laid out and ideas and songs. Maybe we have 4 songs written. We'll get 3 or 2.5 done or 3 done, you know, on a good day, and then listen to those and then make adjustments, really. So it was really, man, it was really basic and trial and error, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely learning on the fly. That's how I felt jumping into sports, because I had no blueprint. Somebody left the door open for me. I didn't go to journalism school. It was just like, hey, I just know sports. And I'm going to try it. And I kept getting challenged. And I wasn't backing down. So I understand the process with that. I opened up. I was like saying I was a big fan. You know, I found you on the blog. Right. I think it was free. I think it was on Smash at the time, from West Side With Love. But then you also had, I actually had dove back deep and went like 25th hour and the other tape, I think it was Best After Bobby. So, and this is before I actually met Jason. I met Jason like a decade later, which was kind of crazy because I actually was fucking with his music too. But Watermelon Sunday, how does it feel for your music, especially around the blog era, to like stamp you as like the official summer music guy? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you, everybody was like, you know what, it's good weather, let's go play some Dom Kennedy. How did that feel, like, just being that guy? Because I never, honestly, I'm trying to think of actually a artist that I'd be like, damn, the summer here, I'm waiting for it. Probably DJ Quick for me, but you know, for you to be that young up and coming guy, you know, around that time, how did it feel, just over, like, just in general, just getting that love,
man? It was a word of mouth and a conscious effort at the same time. I think it was 50-50. It was something that I always wanted to put a good effort out, especially coming up. It was important for me in the springtime to always let it be known, like, how I was feeling or how I was going to come, you know? So I'm not going to say it was by accident. It was definitely something that I thought about, and I just wanted to contribute. Same thing as now, even though times change and, you know, things get a little bit different, but and just establishing myself, I always wanted to be a part of the springtime and that push with my music. You know, I felt like that was when I would be at my best, and that was when people would be the most open to sharing my music. You know what I'm saying? When it started happening and people started saying that, and even to this day when people say that, or a certain music or album we did or a song gives them a good feeling and it reminds them of the summer, man, it's a blessing. You know what I'm saying? It's a blessing because, like you said, not that many people have that. Not that many people could be synonymous with good feelings and good vibes and being with around people and wanting to share, you know, whatever it is through your music. You know what I'm saying? And so it's something I always loved about what OPM and myself have done. You know what I mean? It's something I've always loved, but I would be lying if I said it was on accident, because it wasn't. You know, it was something that I wished and wanted to be a part of. You know what I mean? It's something I tried to do. You know, some things, sometimes you try and it doesn't work, but sometimes you try and it does. You know what I'm saying? And it was like, and coming up, first three, I would say from 2008 to 2012, it was that was number one on my list. Like, as soon as the year turned around, get your shit together. You know what I'm saying? Like, start being serious, start looking at release dates, start putting more, you know what I mean, getting the music ready. And all of that, all of that, except for West Side Love 2, which was 2011, was for free. It wasn't nothing I was even looking to get compensated for. It was just something I wanted to give more than anything, you know? Something I wanted to just inspire and put out in the universe.
Absolutely. I mean, you definitely did that. I like to compare your early work, especially to like the early movies like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society, because again, even though Good Kid, Mad City painted a picture, you painted a picture, especially for people that didn't live in the city anymore and like wanted to explain how the city was. You explained it from a cool nigga perspective of just like, just a typical Friday, or nigga, this is what we do on Tuesday. Because again, when Grindin' rolled out, a lot of people didn't know about the LA culture and Taco Tuesday. And when y'all actually, you know, put that together, that just was like, when I seen the video, I used to just be sitting around, just watching the shit. I'd be like, yeah, nigga, this is how we do in the city. You know what I'm saying? So having that whole vibe.
I don't even think about it like that because it's so natural to us. You know what I'm saying? Like, we always be on some, like, nigga, we just gonna show the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't tell you how many times Dom has said those exact words to me. Like, we just gonna show the shit. And, like, that's, you know, a very simplistic way of saying, like, be yourself. Yeah. You know, and just, like, do what we've always done. And, like, people are gonna gravitate to that because of what he said before. Like, you know, once you put that vibe out, that energy, you know, of, like, a certain, you know, just coolness or whatever, like,
yeah,
appreciate it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So,
it was all real. It was real live, you know, it still is, but it was all real live and it was groundbreaking. And it was before a lot of things was going on, and we just had the vision and really just the balls to really just do it, for lack of a better term. Like, you know what I mean? For everything we didn't have going in our favor or we wasn't, we had things that we knew made us special still, you know what I'm saying, that they didn't have, you know what I mean? And we was willing to just jump out and put that on Front Street like we did, you know what I'm saying, and not shy away from it, like, you feel me?
Yeah, I mean, y'all inspired a whole new generation, obviously, you know, when you hear a certain artist that's, like, explaining their lifestyle or talking some fly shit, you have to look at it as the Dom Kennedy generation sometimes, because It wasn't too much of that really kind of rolling around. Obviously, everybody wanted to be a gangster. Everybody wanted to, you know, do all these other things. And you really wasn't promoting that. It was just kind of fly shit. Like, nigga, I got women. You know, like, I thought the visual at I think it was Popeyes with the champagne, like, that's still to this day one of the most.
El Pollo Loco.
El Pollo Loco. Yeah, definitely. It was one of those images, like, you know, hood rich to me. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, hey, nigga, we still love El Pollo Loco, even though we're going to go do what we going to do. And, man, it just made it even more cool, man, because, again, I growing up not too far away from you, you know what I'm saying, we kind of grew up the same that way in aspects. Watching the dope boy had a cool car, watching the Hooper or whoever it may be have some type of inspiration you know, on what was going on. And you always been a positive dude, so you ain't really pushed on, you know, getting out of character where somebody say, ah, Dom fake. You know what I mean? It never got to that point. You know what I mean? I think more fans need to understand the evolution also. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because you're not going to be able to be 25 or 24 rapping about that shit no more, because you know, you a father. You're a leader in your community and shit happens. You know what I mean? Like, hold the same. You want my old shit, buy it.
For sure.
So here's another question. What's your favorite Smack DVD battle?
Man, my dude P80. I heard he got Party Artie in that. Who was that? Murder Mook.
That Murder Mook.
Yeah, that one was crazy. That's crazy. And them Murder Mook, J Mills was hard too. But those is top two. But that part, I remember the first time seeing that, that party already in Murder Mook, I couldn't believe it. I was like, yo, this is crazy. I had to watch that at least five times that year.
Had her in the same position as the Twin Towers, caught her off the rebound like Ben Wallace. Send her back to Mookie with $6. Like,
yeah, that was bad. That was incredible, man. That skill and art, you know, even for, I don't care how many records you sold or shows you done did, like, you got to respect the game, man. And that's art right there. You know what I'm saying? That's art in its own way at the highest level, you know, for what they do. You know what I'm saying? And it's not. It's people that's, you know, it's the same thing with hooping or whatever. Like, you can do that, but you might get embarrassed playing over here with these people. You know what I'm saying? Like, they ain't calling no fouls. This is street basketball. This is this. And it's like, everybody game don't translate. You know what I mean? That right there, a lot of people, 99% of these people out here cannot do that.
Cannot do that.
I don't care what they tell you or how much they sold or whatever they talking about, they can't do that. You know what I mean? So I always been somebody that love, you know, lyricism, being witty on the mic, and just being ready, really. You know what I'm saying? And having things that's fly and that's, you know, being ready. Like, I could recognize that, you know, because even before I made songs or wanted to rap or whatever, I still used to write little things and have little shit I would say, you know what I'm saying? Because that's kind of where I grew up. That's my main reason for shouting out Leimert Park. Like, people around in Leimert, the homies I knew, they rapped. Even though they went to school or they smoked or their mom didn't know or whatever, but they rapped for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, they rapped. Like, if you was playing around, they would rap. You know what I'm saying? And say something, you'd be like, oh, shit, hold up. You know what I mean? Like, and so I always watched that as a kid. So as I got older, you know, I just tried my hand in it, really. So for the battle thing, I know that it's a lot that go into that. It's a lot of thought. It's a lot of writing. It's a lot of preparation that goes into being that good at. And then, you know, when you consider no beats, no, you know what I mean, no lighting. Like, everybody, you know, these people won't even get on stage without the flower, the, what is it, the shit that blow their hair crazy, or these niggas, you know what I'm saying? They got
the studio, the whole tricks, pyrometrics,
screen, you know what I'm saying, and all of that shit, you can't get too close to them. It's like, fuck all that. Who gonna really set it off? You know what I'm saying? If we bored and we sitting around, who gonna say something crazy? You know what I'm saying? 3 minutes, nigga, like, you know, everybody will have to shut up at that point. You feel me? It'll go to whoever's spitting it. So I realize that, you know, so I'm always into that. Somebody come up to me, want to know how to do that thing or really talking about they could rap or somebody this and that, I'm going to say, well, shit, let me hear something. Mm-hmm. Rap then. You feel me? I'm not going to listen to your tape. Just tell me what you say on there. Like, this your chance. You feel me? I done been put on the spot like that. So, again, it's about being ready in the preparation, and that's how people know if you're serious or not. Now, that don't mean you can make a great record, obviously, but in the context of that lane, you know what I mean? I like to say, shit, you got to do both. You got to do whatever.
Yeah.
I remember when you met Rick Ross for the first time and you rapped for him.
Yeah.
It was in front of like a Mac like this, right? I had like the Diamond store or something.
Yep. And we was just standing there posted. And actually, Nick Diamond, the only reason why that connection happened and why it was filmed, but I was rapping for him and we was chopping it up anyway. Nick Diamond happened to film it because it was in his store. And exactly, if you think about that, I never had Rick Ross on Yellow album if I don't rap right there. You feel what I'm saying? Like, he never had a confidence in me being serious about myself to even, you know, say, like, come to my house, you can kick it for some days. And that's where I recorded that song. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like, you'll get a lot of people, oh, I'm tired, I'm this, I'm that. You'll be like, rap. And they'll be like, nah. And then it's like, man, I'm out of here. You feel me? Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and get your link or look at your video. Everybody don't have time for that.
Right.
You feel me? Like, I'm not no motherfucking radio DJ. Like, you rap. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna play your song. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I got plenty of shit to listen to.
Right.
So you mentioned Leimert Park.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans to open any businesses or stores in Leimert Park?
Hell yeah. And I can't say exactly what, but it's going to be fresh. And I'm looking to do it. Well, with everything going on, let me just say that. You know what I'm saying? That's everything going on in the world. You know, it kind of put a damp on all of our plans. So, you know, you got to factor that in. But, yeah, I do, though. I do. I have something that I want to, again, same thing like the music, I want to contribute. Mm-hmm. And it's not nothing that nobody else doing. It don't have nothing to do with selling T-shirts or whatever, you know what I'm saying? It's not none of that. It's just some fly that I feel like from being in the community and from living not far still right now where I'm at, you know, it's something that I want to see in the community, you know what I'm saying? For the community, by the community, you know? And so, but yeah, I do. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, no doubt. So as we get ready to close it out, Jason, do you have anything that you wanted to ask before I ask the main question?
Nah, not really. I don't think, you know what I'm saying? It's been a dope interview so far. So, you know, I think people will really appreciate just learning more about you and obviously, you know what I'm saying, like us and how we started. And, you know, it's going to be like an interesting thing for fans and people who, you know, don't know about you to learn about you as well.
Yeah, for sure. Nah, it was definitely a different time. It was a different come up. I realized that I don't do many interviews. This is my last one. I might do one when my album drop. Yeah. But I don't even, you know, it's not really nothing to explain. And I really like to put it in the music. If I feel like I got to explain something or tell something, I'm like, well, my music is my job. So I always look for ways. And now I'm more mindful of that factor, you know what I'm saying? And answering the questions in my songs, you know what I'm saying? Instead of just talking openly and blindly about, you know, whatever is possible. A lot of it don't have nothing to do with me, but I try to address things that have something to do with me that people might want to know about. I'm addressing those on my album.
Right.
So,
and if I don't, then that'll be my fault.
So before we close it off, and I know obviously Jason's my co-host, but this serves as a double guest episode. So I'm going to close this out with Jason. You're going to start first, and then Dom, you can close this out with Jason. What advice would you give your 18-year-old self?
That's a great question. What advice would I give my 18-year-old self? Sheesh. I just do more with your time and save more money, invest in more stocks. You know, all the companies that I liked from then have all been super successful, whether it's been Apple, everything on the internet, YouTube, all of that. If I would have invested in that shit when I was, you know what I'm saying, that age or whatever, like, I would have been in a much better position, you know what I'm saying, than I am. But it's all good. Everything else is all good. And I just feel like I wasted a lot of days, whether it was smoking or hanging out or whatever. And, you know, like things, it ends up in your favor if you're smart enough and you pay attention to the clock. And a lot of people never come back. Obviously, you know what I'm saying? We've seen what happened to so many, you know, friends and otherwise. But, you know, I just wish I would have, you know, just being more like, oh, I'm a write something every day or have more journals, more, you know what I'm saying? More of my thoughts and things that I could like go back on. Cause it's like, I love to have pictures and videos, which I have a lot of, but I would love to write down more of my thoughts on those days that I was just chilling, you know?
All right. Thank you. Yeah. All right, Dom, what would you tell your 18-year-old self?
Man, I would say, just be more mindful of the historical context, you know what I'm saying, of the world, of yourself and of the world, you know. I think as youth and as people doing stuff, we get lost in the fact, in a hustle and bustle and every day of trying to figure it out, but we not really mindful. And now we are, you know what I'm saying, now I am, I could say. But all of this is really history, man, one way or another. You know what I'm saying? And you don't want to wait till it's like all passed you by or it's too late to really, you know, realize that main fact. Like, we playing for history. You know what I'm saying? Everybody has a legacy. Everybody is a part of the story. And, you know, it has the start, a beginning, and an end, you know, and it's tied into so many other people. And I could say that I didn't really you know, from that age up until a couple years ago, probably I didn't really, wasn't really mindful of that fact all the way. It's like, man, this is really historic. Like, it's a, it affects a lot of people. You know, our lives affects a lot of people. You know, before I started traveling the world, I didn't really know who was listening to my music. Before I started doing tours, I didn't really know who was listening to my music, you know? But you should always, whether you play a sport, whether you're a student, whether you're a musician, whether you're a clothing designer, you should create, like, it's going to outlast you. You know, not just for your circumstances right then at that moment. You know what I'm saying? And I think, for again, for us, we come out of circumstances where it's like you might just do something for monetary value. You might just do something for a look. But then it's like, what else after that? You know what I'm saying? Like, what more is it to it than that? You know, and I could say that I've been, at least I was thankful enough, and like kind of you pointed to earlier, kind of believed in myself and stayed myself enough to where I didn't have to get caught in playing a character that I have to shake now, you know what I'm saying, or I can't. You know, I grew with myself. I won, I lost as myself, you know what I'm saying? So that leaves me the freedom to continue to tell the truth and be honest and grow. A lot of people don't have that luxury because they do things just based on the moment and their circumstances at the time, you know? And that kind of traps you. Like, even if you get with something for it at that time, but then you got to live the whole rest of your life in debt to that one little time you was broke. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then the grand scheme of history, it was just one little week. You know what I mean? And people do things all the time that land them in jail, and it's like, you did 20 years for a bad 2 months? I can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't trade that. I can't trade that. That doesn't mean you're a terrible person. That just means you was going through a hard time, you know? But in the context of history, like, you don't want your legacy to be, you know, relied upon, you know, the bad things, you know what I'm saying, or the terrible decisions you made. And I think that if you read more history, if you look at yourself like a historical figure and realize, like, everybody didn't always have it figured out. You know what I'm saying? George Washington, before he was a president, he was just a general. Before that, he was just somebody homeboy, and they liked that he was, you know what I mean? He had certain qualities. So he worked his way, and then, shit, people fall into situations by just being themselves, you know what I'm saying? And then it becomes history, you know? But if you're not mindful of that, you'll think like, oh, I'm either born rich or I'm either a superstar or I'm not nothing. Like, nah, bro, you could turn into a superstar just by 10 years of hard work, yep. You know what I'm saying? But you're not going to be a superstar if you sit around for 10 years waiting for somebody to tell you you're a superstar. You get what I'm saying? And that's people's entitlement of today. Is like, they looking at it like, well, when is it going to happen for me? You know, I never really looked at it like that. But if at 18, if I would have, you know, seized it, I would have spent more money on videos. You know what I'm saying? I would have paid attention to more things. I would have made merch how I'm making it now. But I was designing things then, but I had the resources. But like Jason said, I would have, you know, done more. I would have said, you know what, after the show, we ain't having no after parties tonight at the hotel. We gonna work on figuring out how you gonna blow up. You know what I'm saying? Instead of basking into my success of the 30-day tour and getting money. You feel me? We could have been like, who gonna get 30 days next year? You know what I'm saying? As well as my 30, so we got 60 days. Yep. You feel me? Because we doing that now.
Yeah.
We could have been doing that 8 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, man, thank you so much, Dom, you know, for joining us. Before I close this out, let me shout out the other shows on the Count the Dings Network. Check out Bomb on Monday's feed. Check out Pack Your Knives. Check out Woke Bros. Check out Wednesday Sermon with Maima. Check out, what else do we have here? Sorry. And then for Growing Up the Same, rate, review, and subscribe. Tell a friend to tell a friend. This has been an episode of Growing Up with Dom Kennedy and Jason Madison.